Thank you, all the diehards who come at the first session on the last day. This is work with several of my colleagues at the University of Massachusetts and in other places. And it relates to a line of research in which we have been using complete Medicaid claims data together with denominator files to ask questions about trends in cardiovascular events and the outcomes of those events. So that's the context. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. So this year there were within the last few years there have been some very exciting findings that have made a news splash about the extraordinary reduction in the rate of hospitalization within the Medicare population for heart attacks, AMI, acute myocardial infarction. And unfortunately, the database that we've been watching has deteriorated a little bit over this period that we're going to be studying, 2002 to 2012, because up until now, when people leave fee-for-service Medicare and enroll with a capitated HMO-like plan now called Medicare Advantage, we lose their data. So when I started working with Medicare data, it represented a very high fraction of all the people who were over 65 in this country, and now it represents actually only about 75% of those people. But we're getting the non-fee-for-service data back. The ACA mandated that data would be submitted even from the capitated plans, but it's not there yet. Anyway, so one limitation is we're only looking at the fee-for-service beneficiaries. And during the period 2002 to 2007, there's a 23%+ decline in the hospitalization rates per beneficiary, and we're looking at hospitalization rates per full beneficiary year, and so from these are per 100,000, and so it was over 1,000 per 100,000, over one per 100 people. I'm not going to call that 1% because we're actually talking about the number of hospitalizations for that group of people, more than one per 100, and down to 0.87 per 100. And it was noticed, but not understood exactly why the declines for blacks were smaller, but they were still very, very impressive. So whatever we're doing in terms of lifestyle changes, getting everybody to take Lipitor, whatever we're doing, we really are seeing many fewer people going to the hospital with heart attacks. And there's been a bunch of studies, and fundamentally there's this good news to be reported. So what we set out to do was to ask some additional questions about this decline in hospitalization rates and the various outcomes of hospitalizations. We wanted to understand what was 30-day survival following admission to the hospital for a heart attack. We wanted to understand one-year survival to learn about whether we're doing a better job of secondary prevention and keeping people alive. And so as we started this project where we had many questions, we began with a very simple methods question, which was, do we have the right universe that we're studying? And so a question that was asked earlier from the back of the room was, why did you count HIV, if you saw it anywhere on the discharge diagnoses, did you pay attention to the difference between what the first diagnosis was or not? And so we just started with a very simple thing of noticing that the research literature on trends in AMI hospitalization almost exclusively counts only hospitalizations where the principal diagnosis is heart attack. And there are reasons for that. But I came from a different research line. I wasn't a researcher in this particular area. And I said, why don't we look to see all the people who come to the hospital with a heart attack, where a heart attack is one of the listed things. And furthermore, I have another research area which made me ask the question a little bit differently, which was what about hospitalizations where the heart attack comes either in the first or second place, but not necessarily anywhere else? And there's no logical reason why the code that's listed in the second place should be any different than codes listed in the third throughout. But I noticed that in the chronic disease warehouse, the Medicare people say you have had a heart attack in the year if you've gone to the hospital with a heart attack listed in the first or second place. And I have pressed the people at RESDAC, the Research Data Assistance Center, which is supposed to help people with understanding the Medicare data, and which I helped set up, but I'm not working with now. And nobody can explain to me where the logic behind looking at the first and second diagnoses only and calling that and only that a heart attack came from. But we had three potential definitions of what it meant to have a heart attack to go to the hospital with or for a heart attack. So anyway, we just asked, do these trends that people have been reporting look any different if we use a definition? And I'm not going to focus here. I just want to point out to you that you actually get a somewhat different answer if you really hone in on that second position as opposed to two on out. But you do get a very different picture, actually. So our study questions were, are heart attack trends changing either over overall or by race over the period 2002 to 2011, and would the trends look different if we used one definition versus another? And so our specific purpose here that I'm going to talk about is contrasting what we see when we count only these DX1s, the heart attack admissions where the principal diagnosis is a heart attack, or the NEDXs where we see it anywhere on the code. The person, and there are reasons for focusing only on the first listed one. If people are following the rules, there appears to be a fairly clear-cut thing. You're a DX1 if your heart attack was the reason you came to the hospital, and you're a DX non-1, 2+, if a heart attack was noted as part of what was going on during the hospitalization. It could have happened after you came to the hospital. It could have happened before, but thought to be secondary to the main thing that brought you to the hospital. Anyway, so we decided to look at these questions. So this is a retrospective cohort study of trends in hospitalization rates. So our numerators are hospitalizations, our denominators are the Medicare enrollees for whom we have the data to know whether they went to the hospital or not. That is the fee-for-service people over the age of 65 who had hospital coverage. So Medicare would have been the payer and we would have seen the hospitalization. And we only counted the months, and we counted all months during which beneficiaries met all the eligibility criteria. So unlike some other studies, we didn't insist that you were 65 at the first month of the year. If you aged in the middle of the year, we took the 6 months that you were eligible to be in our study. And so we're looking at beneficiary years of data as denominators. Okay, and all the hospitalization rates that I'm going to talk to you about are per 100,000 beneficiary years. Okay, and we've talked about, we have these rates adjusted for age, sex, and race distributions. Let me tell you that on the whole, age normalized to the middle year, to 2007, but the but the age, sex, race distribution of the population wasn't changing that much over time. Our findings really don't rely on that. Okay, so here are the trends. And so what have we got here? There's the DX1s, the ones that are being reported in the literature, and this was really banner news. This has gone down 36% over these 10 years. But if you look at the NEDX, it's still a very large drop, but very much less. Okay, so that's the overall result. And we were interested in questions about whether the large declines of the earlier period, which had been reported, were continuing or leveling off. And in fact, they look like they're continuing very much more when you study the DX1s than when you look at all of them together. They look more like they might be leveling off if you look at them all together. And so that's what this says about differences in the declines, in the rates of decline, for these two different ways of defining the entity that you're looking at. So the 15% decline during the earlier period turned into an only 8% decline during the later period if you count all hospitalizations. Okay, what are we looking at here? We're breaking things out by race. And so we notice if you look the way that the research community has studied these questions, you saw a 24% decline over this time period for blacks. You saw a 37% decline for whites. That's a big difference. But if you look at it when you use the larger, broader, more inclusive definition, you see that the rate for blacks has declined very little and has practically flattened out during the later period, if you look at this. Another thing is that with the traditional definition, the lower pair, you'll see that the crossing, blacks started out having fewer AMI hospitalizations than whites, and they ended up having more, whichever definition you looked at, but the crossing occurred in a different place. It was observable much earlier with a broader definition. And the divergence of black and white rates is much clearer and much starker if you look at it using the broader definition. So it looks, if you look at the principal-only definition, it kind of looks as if blacks and whites are kind of evened out, whereas it looks as if there's an enormous gap if you look at it this other way. Okay, and so the whole story comes from these secondary diagnoses because they are increasing both for blacks and whites and more for blacks than for whites, and that's what's driving the difference in the two pictures. And what my hypothesis is we're watching code swapping, that in 2007 there was a major overhaul of the DRG payment system and that hospitals got in systems and they found out that if somebody who was quite complex came in, it would probably benefit them to pop some other kind of diagnosis into the first place for a person who came in with complicated stuff, including a heart attack, and to decide to call the heart attack secondary to the other thing which might have produced more payment. That's a hypothesis. We want to study that. So anyway, what were our findings? With either definition, we've had this this remarkable decline, you know, very admirable stuff, but there were slower declines in the second 5 years than in the first, and in both periods there were lesser declines for blacks than for whites. And our hospitals, if you look at all the hospitals, if you're trying to understand trends, you have to worry about whether you're measuring the same thing at the beginning of the time as the end of the time. And we don't necessarily have great faith that we are studying this exactly the same thing. So when using this broader definition, the decline is less steep and the racial disparity is more stark. So what are the real causes that might underlie these differences? We think one thing is that there could be some good news in here. There could be that the beginning of this period, black people were more distrusting of hospitals, and they just died at home. They didn't come to the hospital with their heart attack, and now they are actually showing up with their heart attack. So something contributed, some part of what we're seeing could have some good news in it. We don't understand it. It requires more research to understand. Another hypothesis is that blacks just aren't getting the cardiovascular preventive behavioral changes and medications that have so sharply reduced these hospitalizations for whites. So we don't really know about this facts or artifacts. What are we looking at? And we have several hypotheses that I've got down here, although I'm in my last minute. And I'm okay. I'm allowed an extra minute. Okay. Okay, so it's true that when a person comes to the hospital with multiple things going on, there's more of an opportunity to have doubt about whether you should list the heart attack first or second. So it's possible that blacks are having their heart attacks listed second more than whites are, because they are a sicker group coming in. The black people who come in with heart attacks have more multiple comorbidities, and so it's easier to wonder which one is driving the hospitalization. That's one thing that might be going on. We think that there's this code bumping. There's a part of the gaming of the system, and it might be that that the hospitals that black people go to have figured out the code bumping better than the other hospitals. I really don't know. I don't know what's going on, but we've absolutely seen this dramatic change in the fraction of all hospitalizations that have any heart attack listed, that have it listed in the first or other position. So we do know that there are quality reporting and payment implications of putting the AMI diagnosis in the first place, and the decision about whether it goes in the first place or something else happens when the hospitalization is over, when you already know whether the person has died, when you already know how much it cost you, when you already know a lot of things. So there's a lot of opportunity for people to take a judgment call and to flip it the other way. We do know that there is a reason why there might be more AMIs coded in secondary positions, because hospitals have gotten more aggressive at instructing their staff to write down any evidence of a heart attack if they can find it. So it could be that the same kind of hospitalization which occurred early in the period and nobody bothered to write down the secondary code of heart attack because it wasn't the main thing going on, that very same hospitalization in the later period might well have had someone write down the heart attack. So both measures, the DX1 only and the all measure, have different biases. And at least if you look at the two, you understand that the truth is probably somewhere in between. But it certainly is not fully captured by DX1s. And when there's such a dramatic change, you have to be cautious when you say we have a finding based on looking at this narrow definition, which appears to be operating on a smaller and smaller fraction of that total potential population. We don't know which is right. We're working on trying to understand this phenomenon, and we think, I'd like to say, I can tell you the right way to do this. You should look at all or first and second rather than first. All I can say is that there may be real insights to be gotten by understanding the difference between these kinds of hospitalizations. There are very different 30-day survival statistics associated with these first listed versus other listed heart attacks. There are very different costs associated with these kinds of hospitalizations. And so if you really want to understand trends in anything over time using Medicare data, you should pay attention to these secular forces which cause changes in how the phenomenon you're looking at is coded, and how the same definition might mean something a little different at the beginning of the period than it does at the end of the period. Thank you very much. Okay, so what about prescription meds? So the Medicare Part D benefit came in 2006, and while the data are available for drugs, and you could try to collate that information, it's actually not it's not part of the usual data that you get to look at. It's certainly when you're looking at the claims data, you know, for hospitalizations, you don't see that. So the truth is, I haven't looked at it. I'm not really someone who has made understanding this use of these meds part of my research. But I think it would be a very interesting question, and undoubtedly the dissemination of statins. The wide uptake rate of statins has a lot to do with these really incredibly impressive declines in hospitalization rates for heart attacks. Other questions? Thank you.
Okay. Any question for any of the presenters?
So for geographic analyses, the census tract or community district is what's preferred. However, we don't have the address for the inpatient hospitalizations, so we couldn't get it at that level. But yes, you're completely right. That should have been another limitation, and we need to have a smaller geographic unit.
Would the American Community Survey have been rich enough at a finer level to give you the data?
Probably not as well, because their zip code level 5, actually they do have, our city planning has worked with getting at a census tract, but we would have to work with them to get that information as well. But yes, we would need the address in the hospitalization data to geocode that to that fine level.
Yes.
This was preliminary analysis, yeah. So, but basically, because for the comparison of rural and urban samples, we use a z-test. So there's an assumption there's normal distribution. I agree with you, and there could be some limitation. Yeah.
What was the size of your data set? I'm forgetting. How large are they?
How much?
7 million unweighted. Yeah. Probably try to be very robust,
Yeah, that's advantage of using this national hospital discharge data set. Yeah.
Angelica didn't have that.
Suggestion. Yeah. I think the question is let me try to understand your suggestion is to keep the central counties separate from the fringe counties, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because we combine for the urban counties, we combine central and fringe counties into the same group, treating them as the urban, but the suggestion is to separate them differently to see whether there's any differential effect. Yeah.
And you might also consider, since you have such a large, robust data set, a small hospital in a rural area may mean something very different than a small hospital in an urban area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so if you did a little interaction there, maybe you could give us some insight into what it is about smallness.
Yes. We control the ownership status in the model, but the interesting is that we find that I think we use non-profit private as a reference, and private for profit, they had higher patients treated in private for profit had a higher hospitalization rate due to ACAC, but we don't know how to interpret that.
So, I just wanted to point out that the medical care section has a very active rural and frontier health committee.
Yeah.
That people who are interested in
yes.
rural hospitals and in general in rural
sure,
health
yeah.
Should be in touch. And they had an organizational meeting here.
Sure.
it's very important, as you say.
Yeah.
20% of the people in the country live
Saturday.
In these areas,
yeah.
and their health is not improving. In some cases, it's actually de-improving.
Mm-hmm.
The way, it's not the same picture that you see for people.
Yeah,
suddenly.
Yeah.
Oh, and there, Mary, do you want to tell people about Mary Wakefield, who is a rural health
I don't have that information. Yeah, you can talk about that.
That's,
I think
she's
administrator of HRSA, right?
The administrator of HRSA. She grew up in a rural area, and she's a very impressive woman.
Okay, before you, go ahead. Yeah.
So the healthy immigrant effect is certainly true, but in Hawaii, you know, some of our groups are very, we can't separate that out in the administrative data, right? So we see, we know they're Chinese, but we don't know if they're new Chinese and old. And in Hawaii, some of the Chinese are, you know, third generation Chinese, have been there for a very long time, and some are brand new. And so it's been hard to sort that out, but that's an interest of ours. And another analysis we have, we're looking at maternal health outcomes from using ARC indicators, and we have a limited English proficiency in a subset of our analyses, and we thought we'd see worse outcomes. Well, we weren't sure. It was like one of those, you know, we didn't know if we'd see the healthy, you know, non-English speaking population because of the same things that we've seen in Hispanics or not. And what we found was that across most of the outcomes, the people with limited English proficiency, so that's sort of our best proxy, you know, for new immigrants, but probably not perfect, that we didn't see much worse quality for anything except for obstetric tears. And obstetric tears, we did see worse outcomes for people with limited English proficiency, so we don't know if that's a communication issue at the point of birth, and we don't know if maybe birth outcomes aren't the ones in which you'd see the most disparities, presumably chronic care management or something more complicated. You know, maybe birth outcomes, much of it is, you know, not something you're talking about or discussing or whatever, you know, or maybe it is the healthy immigrant hypothesis. So that's actually something we've been very interested in Hawaii, and it's been hard to sort out with the administrative data specifically, though. Thank you.
Dr. H just provided me with this information. So from 12:30 to 2 o'clock today, there's a section about place matters, ongoing disparities in rural health status. It's in Convention Center, Rivergate. Thank you, Dr. H.
Yes?
Oh, no, okay. Any further questions for any of the presenters? No? Oh, please join me in thanking all of us.